Okay, good morning. So you've heard several times, you know, reference to this 104 cotton that we did several years ago for maturity measurements. So we've decided to use the same set of cotton to perform FAVIMAT. So we did the FAVIMAT with a gauge length of 10 millimeters, which means that the fibers shorter than 16 millimeters cannot be tested. Why did we do that? It's because 10 millimeter, it is a minimum gauge length to get the fineness with a vibroscope from the FAVIMAT. We did 3 reps of 150 fibers. All the fibers were picked randomly. And obviously, that's many, many fibers, and we need to first inspect all the data for outliers. So for most of the sample, we had very, very few outliers. In general, 1 to 2 fibers showed discrepancy between the maximum elongation and the elongation at break. This mostly revealed fiber slippage and possibly some instrument malfunction, so these fibers were removed from the data set. Then looked at the linear density data, and it revealed that a few fibers had very, very high linear density, which is was clearly not correct. It's likely because 2 fibers were broken instead of 1. So these data were also removed. So we tested a total of 46,950 fibers. It was very fun. And among those, 342 were removed from the data set, considered outlier. It corresponds to less than 1% of the population of fibers tested. So the first thing is to look at the relationship between the elongation at break and the work to break for this set of samples, the 104. As you can see, you have a very good linear relationship between the two. It's pretty obvious that elongation at break has a big impact on the work to break, with really a very, very nice R-square. If you look at the force to break versus work to break, you can see that it's still linear, but the relationship is far lower. So what does it mean? It means, as previous speaker said, the work to break is the quantity of energy you need to break a fiber. So when you compare those two, it's pretty obvious that what is most important, at least for this set of sample, is elongation. Elongation is more important to determine the energy to break than the force to break. It is also, unfortunately, a parameter that we don't look at, because as you know, with AGI, we have no calibration for elongation. We use AGI in breeding programs since at least 20 years, so which means that we ignore elongation since 20 years. And we begin to see some drift. We begin to see some commercial varieties with extremely low elongation, therefore low work to break, therefore potential for a lot of breakage at the chain. For the elongation at break, the range of variation for this sample is quite large. It goes from 6.1 to 12.7%, while it's much, much more narrow for the force to break, 3.6 to 6.1. So it just confirms that we have a very wide range of variability in elongation available in the current germplasm, which is, you know, make perfect sense, as we didn't breed for it since many, many years. You know, it's just there. We just had to use it. And it's what Ruvini showed in the previous paper. When you begin a breeding program to improve elongation, you have excellent results extremely quickly. In just 3 generations, we improved the work to break by 50%. So if you look at elongation at break versus force to break, so you can see the relationship is not good. You know, it's pretty weak. But the strange thing is that it's positive. Stronger fibers tend to have more elongation. You know that with HVI, it's just the inverse. When you compare a set of cottons, you have a negative relationship with about the same type of R-square. between elongation and force to break. But within a sample, this relationship is positive. So stronger fibers tend to have more elongation. And as you can see, on the same sample, for HVI, R square was 0.12, but negative, while for individual fibers, it's 0.16, so it's about the same. So, and it's also one of the reasons why, you know, the breeders never really pushed to add elongation to the breeding program, because say, okay, we have a negative relationship, so if we improve elongation, we will decrease strength. And obviously, nobody wants that. But in fact, it's just wrong. First, the relationship is weak, you know, about 0.12. And second, at the level of individual fibers, the relationship is positive. Stronger fibers have more elongation. They tend to have more elongations. So if you look at the relationship between HVI elongation and the average Fabimat elongation at break, you have a positive relationship. It's not great, but 0.5 R-square. If you look at HVI strengths versus Fabimat tenacity, and here we use the linear density of each individual fiber. We didn't choose, you know, an average linear density. You see that the relationship is excellent, 0.82. If you look at the product, strength elongation, from HVI, which basically gives you a kind of an estimate of the work to break, versus the true work to break measured with Fabimat, the relationship, again, is positive, linear, and pretty good. So relationship between Fabimat tensile property and HVI bundle properties are all linear with a positive slope and a rather good coefficient of determination. So why do we have a positive relationship among samples with the Fabimat and a negative one with HVI? So what is the difference between individual fiber testing and then averaging all your fibers and a bundle? So the first thing, you know, is that with individual fibers, obviously you have no interaction effect. You just break one fiber. It doesn't interact with anything. While in a bundle, you have a bunch of fibers. You have friction. You have many things that may have an impact on what you are measuring. So among these main effects, you have obviously tenacity and its variability, elongation, work to break, friction, crimp, wax content, and the standard deviation of all these factors. So intuitively, we understand that a bundle with a large variation in elongation from fiber to fiber will not behave the same as a perfect bundle where all fibers are identical. Let's say that you have a bundle made of 10 fibers. They are all exactly identical, and you pull. Your load will be distributed among your 10 fibers. Okay? Now you have, again, 10 fibers, but 5 have a low elongation and 5 an high elongation. You apply the same stress. What happened? All the load is applied on the low elongation fibers that will break first, and then the other 5 break too. Okay? So when you have a large variability in elongation, in fact, you decrease the bundle strengths. It makes sense. So let's look at the variability among fibers. If you look at, for the 104, the Fabimat elongation at break versus the standard deviation of the elongation at break, you have a clear relationship between the two. Higher elongation, higher standard deviation. That's the reason why we have this negative relationship, elongation tenacity on bundles, but we don't have it on individual fibers. It's because of the standard deviation. But you have also a linear and a rather strong relationship between tenacity with the Fabimat and the standard deviation of the tenacity. And same thing for the work to break. Okay? So stronger the cotton, more elongation you have, more viability you have. And that's the reason why bundles don't behave the same way. So obviously bundles, they are very important because we want to predict yarn strength. So there is nothing wrong with a bundle test. But we are also extremely interested in predicting short fiber, fiber breakage at the jean, fiber breakage in the card, etc. And for this, we don't work on bundle. We work on individual fibers or little tufts of fibers. Bundle numbers don't tell you anything about propensity to break. You have to look at individual fibers. So, in fact, we need both. I told you that. Then, if you look at the distribution, so for that, I wanted to have a less biased sample, so we use the 3 millimeter gauge instead of 10 millimeter gauge. So we just have the force to break and the elongation. We don't have the tenacity because we couldn't normalize. And we look at on just four samples, the 2,000 fibers per sample. And here, I give you an example of two bales that have exactly the same micronair. Micronair is 4.28, okay? But one has a small fiber perimeter and is mature, the other one not so much. What you see here, you have, so the same micronair, 4.28. This cotton has a lot of very mature fiber, is pretty fine in diameter. This one, even if the micronair is exactly identical, you see that you have much more immature fibers in the coarser cotton. So obviously these two cottons will not behave at all the same way in processing. So when you break these fibers one by one and you look at the force to break, it's pretty clear that the distributions are different. This cotton that has more immature fibers have more fibers with extremely low force to break, and obviously less with extremely high force to break compared to that one, which means that it has higher propensity to break, the length distribution will be poorer because of the breakage, and the yarn quality will be poorer. So now we look at a bale that, at two bales that have nearly the same micronair, low micronair discount range, and same thing. So this one has a micronair of 341, 332, you know, very, very close. You can see that this bale has a bunch of very immature fibers, which, you know, most of the people would expect with a low micronair cotton. But this one, even if the micronair is low, you know, has a pretty good number of fibers that are mature. So now you break these fibers one by one, and what do you see? You see that this cotton that has a lot of extremely mature fibers are also a very large part of the population in very low force to break. It makes sense. So you have a kind of a direct relationship between maturity, tensile property, and length distribution. All these things are related. You can't just look at one and ignore the other. They are connected after processing. Obviously, what would be great would be to know the true length distribution on the seed before you do anything. And it's one of the projects we have, and it may be just a dream, we'll see. But with all this different research we are doing, trying to go back to the unbroken distributions. We think that if we can understand the relationship between these different parameters, we should be able, by looking at the distribution of a cotton after processing, to rebuild the original distribution before processing, which would be extremely useful for the breeders because they will be able to work on the true genetic lengths and not the lengths after breakage, which would also remove the impact of maturity. And let's say that when you have a bad season, you know, drought or something like that, cotton is immature, you have a lot of breakage, and you are a breeder, you can't really, I mean, it's a lost year, basically, because what you are looking at, it's not the genetic length, what you are looking at is a bunch of broken fibers. You can't tell what you are looking at. But if we could remove the breakage impact due to this lower maturity, then you will be able to keep going as usual. So it could be extremely useful. But maybe a dream. We'll see in a few years. Maybe before I retire. We'll see. So, conclusion, based on cross-section, the differences between the two types of cotton, mature versus less mature, for a given level of Macronair are quite obvious. It shows also that the premium Macronair range could have a very significant part of its fiber population in a very low force to break. So it's not because it's a premium Macronair that it will perform well. But we have also the inverse. A discounted Macronair may perform relatively well. So we have, again, you know, I mean, everybody says that at nearly every presentation, Macronair, we have to be extremely, extremely cautious. It's a parameter that we should, especially for breeders and biotech people, we should probably forget it. So I'd like to acknowledge Cotton Incorporate, CSIRO in Australia, and CRDC in Australia too. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for the speaker?
Yes.
Is it thought that the elongation parameter relates to the angle of the sinus of the fibers in the secondary wall?
Part of it, but not all of it. You have also the distribution of the amorphous regions have an importance. The angle, but at the angle, I don't think within a genotype changed that much. I think it's much more a question of distribution and organization of the cellulose. You know, a lot of people, if you look at many papers, what they say is that immature cottons tend to have more elongation. But immature cottons also tend to have weaker fibers. But what we see is that stronger fibers have more elongation. So it seems that it's not logical. But in fact, it is. Because a fiber that is very immature has in quantity, not in percentage, in quantity, more amorphous cellulose than a fiber that is less mature. So I think it's one of the problems with crystallinity. We express it in percent, while in fact we should probably express it in microgram or something. This percentage makes you have a lot of confusions due to that, and especially that immature fibers have more elongation. That's not the case. It's a question of quantity. If you have more amorphous cellulose within a fiber, you have more elongation. But this fiber could be very strong. It's just that you have a lot of cellulose because it's very mature fiber. I think it's much more of a quantity issue than a percentage.
Okay, if there are no more questions, thank the speaker.
Thank you.